The 22nd mitzvah, mitzvah chav beis, is mitzvahs pidyon peter chamor. It's a very interesting mitzvah that's usually glossed over. People don't study it too much, and the mitzvah is lifdos vlad chamor zachar shenol lad rishon. We saw before that that the firstborn animal of kosher animals have a certain level of holiness. So here, it's very interesting that we find specific halachos associated with non-kosher animals, which we don't really find usually. So we have to, but it's not a holiness per se, it's just that there's a mitzvah to redeem it. The firstborn offspring of a donkey, the male, all these things only apply to male animals, that was born first. Shenemar, the cholpeter chamor tivdevesa, all the firstborn donkeys you shall redeem with a lamb. It could be says used to mean a lamb or a goat, a kid goat. It's any small animal as opposed to a calf. V'inyanahu, the Indian is like this. The subject is like this. Shelokeach haYisrael se'echad, that the Jew takes one little animal. V'nosno laKohen b'fidyon b'chorach hamor, and he gives it to the Kohen as the redemption of the firstborn donkey. Shehu Lashem Yisbarach Minatam Shekosavnu Lamala, that God likes the firstborn because of the reason that we discussed last time, which is A, that people shouldn't feel that they're trying to have success, but rather it really comes from God. So as soon as you have a firstborn, you have to give it away right away. And also because as a remembrance of the plague of the firstborns in Egypt. V'hu baruchu nesanu l'kohen, God decided that the redemption it goes to the priest. Why? Because most things, these presents go to the Kohen because they don't have any other ways to support themselves. Because they weren't given a chelek of the land to work, so the Kohanim have to be supported by gifts from the general populace of the Jewish people. Somewhat like Kollel in Israel nowadays. Although the difference is, as many people point out, is that the Kohanim provided a service in return. It wasn't just that they were learning for their own sake. Ulefikach, podehu haYisrael mimenu. So the regular Israelite, the regular Jew, redeems the firstborn donkey. Ki Hashem Yisbarach rotza sheyeh lo pidyon b'seh. Because God doesn't really care what happens to non-kosher animals. It's not that shouldn't be the focus. So really, we have to redeem the firstborn donkey with a kosher animal and give it to the Kohen, because the Kohen doesn't necessarily have much use for a donkey because he can't eat it.
Has the donkey or one of these animals, he still has to give the
donkey? No, we're going to get to that in a second. The Kohen does not have to. If the mitzvah does not apply to Kohanim or Levim, it only applies to regular Yisraelim. V'im ein lo se podehu bidmesa, which is very interesting. We don't find such flexibility in most mitzvot, which is that if you don't have an actual little animal to redeem the donkey, you could give money that's the equivalent value of a seh. Ulefi she'ein d'mei haseyos shavin, because they're expensive animals and cheaper animals. Amar Rabbeinu Zichronim Livracha, they gave approximate measurements. Ayin yafe b'sela, a generous person gives a sela, which is a certain measurement of coin. Ra'a b'chatzi sela, and if you're not so generous, if you're a little stingy, then you give a chatzi sela, because I guess there are some types of says that are only worth half sela. Ubeinonis, if you're not so generous, you're just a regular person, you're not so stingy either, then shlosh azuzim, which is halfway between a sela, which is two zuz, and halfway between half a sela and a full sela. Full sela is four zuzim, half a sela is two, so three zuzim is in between.
Yeah, how can I say that?
Uzman hapidyon ad shloshim yom. You can redeem it until the chamor is 30 days old. Not that it's forbidden to redeem it later, but that's really when you're supposed to do it by 30 days old. Ve'aseh chulin b'yad kohen. So what would you think, actually, if you usually, a firstborn animal has a certain level of kedusha, of holiness. So you'd think that if you switched it and the seh takes the place of the donkey, then you'd think that the seh should receive the kedusha of a bechor. That's not true. You switch it, and the kohen gets the seh, but it's completely a regular animal, without any kedusha whatsoever. V'chamor b'yad Yisrael, and the Jewish owner of the donkey gets to keep it, and it's also completely secular animal. Without any kedusha. But the donkey before it's redeemed indeed does have a certain level of holiness, and you wouldn't be allowed to use it to shear it. I don't know if you shear donkeys, but if you to use it as a animal of burden or anything like that before you perform the redemption ceremony. Mishor she mitzvah zo, the reasoning for this mitzvah, as he already alluded to, kidei sheyizkru ha-yehudim le'olam ha-neis sh'asa lehem akel b'tzias Mitzrayim, that the Jewish people should always remember the miracle that God performed for them during the exodus from Egypt, shaharad kol b'chareyam shenim shalu l'chamorim. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel that says, talking about Egypt, and says, b'sar chamorim b'saram, the flesh of donkeys is their flesh. So since they're considered to be very low-level people, the Yechezkel wasn't written yet when the mitzvah was given. But still, since chamorim are what's mentioned explicitly, God wanted the mitzvah to refer specifically to firstborn donkeys as opposed to other non-kosher animals, kemoshe kasuv, as it's written. Yeah, it says here in the footnotes, actually, quoting the parish of Rabbeinu V'chai, who says that ve'od she'ein lach kol echad ve'echad mi'Yisrael, when the Israelites were going for Egypt, there's not a single one, shelo alu tishim chamorim mimo te'unim kesev izav, that didn't have 90 donkeys loaded with gold and silver at that time. Nice. Yeah, very good. So that's why specifically as regarding donkeys. Also, the Mori Nevuchim, the Rambam, says that the donkey is the only pack animal that's commonly used by everyone. I guess that was the case in the ancient Near East, whereas horses and camels were only so few people could afford them, I guess, or they weren't found in every place. So since donkey was the only non-kosher animal that was used in completely general use, that's why the Torah required us to perform the mitzvah with donkeys, because donkeys are the standard pack animal. Very rationalistic explanation. The dine ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. Kigon shutvis hagoy o mekabel chamor mimenu lihitapel bo. So for what happens if you have a non-Jewish ownership of the donkey, either it could happen either one of two ways. Either you have a donkey that's about to give birth, and it's partially owned by a non-Jew as well, then it would be exempt from the mitzvah of Petar Chamor, just like it would be exempt from the mitzvah of a regular Bechor Behema Tahora. And also, if you get an animal that's, you're not sure whether it's had its firstborn or not, so what would you think you'd do? The donkey, once the donkey gives birth the first time you see it, but you don't know if it's given birth previously, so you, indeed, you have to be mafresh a seh. You have to take a seh and say, this is the pidyon, this is the redemption of the Petar Chamor. But you have to keep it, because you're not sure if it's really obligated in the mitzvah of Petar Chamor or not. So therefore, the Kohen can't come and demand, oh, give me my seh, it's supposed to give it to me. Because you say, well, if you're really sure that this seh is coming to you, then prove to me that this donkey really is pregnant for the first time. It's part of the principle in the Torah of Hamotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya. If you want to change the status quo of monetary things, then the burden of proof is on you. So this, in other words, if this Kohen wants to get his seh, then he has to prove that it's a real, that it was used to replace is really obligated in the mitzvah of Petar Chamor. We find this in many other cases where, for example, there's produce, where obviously you have to tithe, in there it's Israel, you have to tithe the produce and give some of the tithes to a kohen. So if it's produce that you're not sure whether it's obligated in the tithes or not, you don't have to give, I mean, the tithes that can only be eaten by a kohen, then obviously you're not gaining anything necessarily by keeping it to yourself. But tithe, there are certain tithes that are chulin, that are you're supposed to give it to the Kohen or the Levi, but it's not usur for you to eat it. It's just regular produce that just monetarily belongs to the Levi, really. So in such a case, if there's doubtfully tithed produce, then you have to tithe it again out of because of the doubt. So you don't have to give it to Levi. You have to tithe it because to separate out the tithe, otherwise the rest of the produce remains tevel. It remains untithed produce and it's not kosher. But you don't have to give that produce to the Levi because you could say, well, Mr. Levi proved to me that this hasn't been tithed and it's really required to be tithed, and then I'll give you the tithe. Otherwise, I'm going to eat it myself. V'din goy shefrish peter chamor madino. What if a non-Jew decides he wants to switch his firstborn donkey with a lamb or a goat? So that's nothing. Basically, it's you tell him that you don't need to do that, and you don't take that into account at all. V'din chamor sheyolda kiminsus. Let's say there was a donkey that gave birth to a genetically mutated offspring, and it looked more like a horse than a donkey. So this we consider a matter of doubt. It's discussed in the Gemara, and it's not because they didn't come to a clear conclusion. So this is also a suffix, and you have to separate out a set to replace as a pidyon for this offspring of the Petr Chamor. But again, you would not have to give that to the Kohen because it's only a matter of doubt. But you still, in order to declare this offspring, which looks like a horse, to be regular, to be regular chulin, then you would still have to separate something for it.
Can you separate?
This is also the case, by the way, with a bechor behema tahora of a kosher animal. If it gives birth to something that's a mutant and it doesn't look at all like the parent, then it's also be considered a suffix. But again, we have to figure out exactly what kind of cases they're talking about. Well, how could a donkey give birth to something that looks like a horse?
What if I made it with a horse?
No, but that's a mule. That's a mule, I guess. But
yeah.
But is that a male donkey and a female horse, or is that a male horse and a female donkey? I think it only works one way. I forget. Anyway. Because it has to be, the donkey has to be the female, has to be the mother, because it's all the bechor always goes with the mother and not the father. V'din lokech hamor migoy, and you don't know whether it had offspring yet. It's the same thing. It's a suffix, same din as just explained. V'din suffix in bikra madino. Again, it could be Jewish also, bought from a Jew, and you're not sure whether it gave birth already. V'din no sein hachamor be'atzmo lakoin. What if you don't do a pidyon, you don't replace it with a seh, you just give the firstborn donkey straight away to a kohen, he still has to separate a seh for it. It doesn't work. Just say, here's your holy donkey, and enjoy. You know, yotzei the mitzvah, and the kohen's not allowed to use it, and the kohen, I mean, it could still belong to the kohen, but the kohen still has to separate out a seh in replacement for the donkey. The Yeser Proteha and the rest of the details, Mivarim b'maseches b'choros, where else? B'noheges b'chol makom of b'chol zman, b'zecharim, it's applicable in all times and places, even in chutz laretz. So you see occasionally Jewish farmers who are fulfill the mitzvah of Petr Chamor, which is usually they try to get out of the mitzvah of Bechor Behema Tahora, of a regular, real, holy Bechor, of a kosher animal, because it creates so many problems. And but if Petr Chamor, it's easy. You just have you have the donkey and you have the seh, and you say, Zeh, this is the pidyon for this, and that's it. And you can use the donkey, you could use the seh. Very easy.
But really, people do this?
Yeah.
I mean, here?
People who own donkeys, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, people do it, but this is very easy. So some people who own farms and have the ability to own donkeys sometimes go out of their way to fulfill this mitzvah because it's very easy. Benoheges b'chol makom v'chol zman. Yeah, b'zchar m'v'n kevos Yisrael, whether it's the owner of the donkey is a male Jew or a female Jew, but only if they are Israelites and not Kohen Levi, whether the man or the woman is a Kohen or a Levi. It doesn't matter. And so if there's a married couple, for example, that owns a donkey, so let's say the wife is a Kohen and the husband is Israel, so if it's part of the marital possessions that really belong to the wife, and let's say if they got divorced or then she would just take these possessions and leave the marriage and they'd belong to her, then if it was something like that, then if she was a Kohen, then this donkey would not be required to be nifta, because it belongs to a Kohen. Yeah. Ve'over aleha b'tel asei. And if you didn't want to do this, then same, you just neglected to perform a positive commandment. And again, no specific penalty associated with it other than the fact that you did a bad thing. Okay, the next mitzvah is the corollary mitzvah to Pidyon Peter Chamor, which is mitzvahs arifas Peter Chamor, the beheading of the firstborn donkey. It's a little very strange, but...
Beheading,
yeah. La'arof peter chamor im lo ratza liftoso. So if you had a firstborn donkey and you didn't feel like doing something very simple by taking out a goat or a lamb and switching it and giving it to the goat, and if you didn't feel like doing that, I don't know why, then you have to behead it. Shenamar vim lo sifdev arafto. Seems like a waste of a perfectly good donkey. I don't know. Why would...
Don't you break its neck?
I mean, use a knife. You don't just go... You'd have to take a knife and go in the back of the neck, yeah. I don't know if you have to take the head clean off, but it's still... I don't know. This mitzvah is very... It's very hard to understand. Not that we need to understand it, but... In yana shahorig vlada chamorim lo ratza liftoso. If you don't want to be pode, then you just... kill the firstborn donkey. The Gazar Hashem Yisbarach Shelo Yehano Bo Mikevan Shelo Padahu. Since you neglected to perform this mitzvah, then you shouldn't have benefit from the donkey. The Afilu Hanavelo Asura Lo Bahana. This thing that you just this baby donkey that you just beheaded has to be buried, and you can't have even any benefit from the carcass by selling it or something. It's the same reasoning as the p'diyah, the redemption. Midine mitzvah, masha amru. This is part of the halachos. The mitzvah's p'diyah kodemes larifa. Obviously, it's preferable to do the redemption rather than behead it, because again, why waste a perfectly good donkey? This is I assume maybe that part of the reasoning for this mitzvah is that since the other one is so easy, people, and you just switch the lamb for the or the goat for the donkey, you might, and there's no real kedusha associated with it, then people might be lax in the mitzvah. So maybe this is to tell you that you really should have to be nizhar to do it, because if not, you gotta break its neck. Right, but presumably this is to impress upon us that it's something you really have to do to be podet. And otherwise, you have to do something very extreme to it, so you might as well be podet. V'she'asor b'hano imeis kodem pidyon v'yikover. Right. So if when the firstborn donkey is just born, and you didn't have a chance to redeem it yet, then let's say it just dropped dead on its own accord, then it maintains its holiness and the carcass has to be buried, and you can't get any benefit from it by selling it or otherwise. V'chi mitzvah lahargo bekofitz v'lo bedavar acher. You have to kill it with an axe and not something else. V'yeser pratea mivarim kamken bevachoros v'noheges bakol kimo apdia. And it's applicable just in the same way. Any animal that's required to be redeemed is required to be beheaded. If you neglect to redeem it. Again, why you should want to do that, I don't know. Okay, we have finished Parsha's bow. Shkoyach. Now we're going to get to Parsha's Bishalach, and then, of course, Parsha's Yisro, where the real midi mitzvahs come into play. So in Parsha's Bishalach, it says, Mitzvah Chavdalah, the 24th mitzvah, The mitzvah is we should not go out on Shabbos outside the ritual boundary of the city.
There's one negative commandment. We
have been enjoined from walking on Shabbos outside of certain boundaries. This is the first time in the Torah where it really mentions, I mean, besides the very beginning of Parshas Bereishis, where it really mentions that the children of Israel were commanded regarding the mitzvah of Shabbos. So it says, one of the few actually specific things that it says in the Torah regarding what's forbidden on Shabbos, it says each person should not leave his or her place on the seventh day. Uva perish alav, and the traditional accepted interpretation of this is shemakomo nikra, the person's place is called kol she'eno marchik yoser mishalosh parsaos chutz leir. If you're going more than three parsaos outside the city in which you find yourself on Shabbos, that is called the tchum on a doraisa level. The parsa arba milin. The parsa is 4 mil, which is where we get the word mile. The hamil alpayim amma. And the mil is 2,000 amos. So 2,000 times 4 is 8,000 times 3 is 24,000. So 24,000 amos outside the city on a deraisa level is the Tchum Shabbos. So let's do a quick calculation of how much that is in our current measurements. So let's take the most stringent measurement of an amma. The smallest possible measurement is 45 centimeters. So times what we say 24,000 amos is 10.8 kilometers, which is how many miles? So it's 6.7 miles. 6.7 miles. So that's midaraisa, the Tchum Shabbos. This is the most stringent possible measurement. Some measurements of the amma are bigger, but that's the smallest estimate that's given for the size of an amma. So let's go with that. But this is a daraisa, so I guess we have to go stringently. Not that anyone ever walks 7 miles outside the city on Shabbos anyway. No, but second. Umodadin, where do you start measuring from? Misifas habayis hachitzon shebair, afilo haisa gedola keninve. You start measuring from the outermost house of the city, even if the city is as big as Ninveh. Of course, Ninveh was much smaller than New York. So I got to figure out what the borders of New York are for halachic purposes. But also, it doesn't matter if the city is surrounded by a wall or not. You know, for Shabbos purposes, in terms of carrying, then the city is only considered one place if it's surrounded by a wall and it has doors closed at night, in which case you'll be allowed to carry in the entire city on Shabbos. But if the city is not surrounded by a wall, then it's not considered one unit for other Shabbos purposes, but still for Tchum it doesn't matter. That even if it's not surrounded by the wall, the entire city is considered one unit, and you start measuring from the outermost house of that city. Zehu l'din Torah, that's on the Daraisa level. Elo shechachomim godru geder, the chachomim wanted to put a fence around this prohibition and make sure you didn't even come close to violating the Daraisa. The osru shelo leilich yoser me'alpayim amma chutzlir. They made it much, 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 much smaller. You see that the original measurement is 24,000 amos, and they reduced it by a factor of 12. They divided it by 12, and you can only go a 12th of that distance outside the city on Shabbos. So that would be about half a mile, a little bit more. Right. They couldn't, right. That, George Washington Bridge could definitely be a problem.
Although there are people who actually used to live in Washington, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well, we'll explain that. We'll, it could be there. I don't know if it actually works, but sometimes there are funny calculations regarding how the city works, so we'll get there. We'll get there in a second. I'm not sure whether the George Washington Bridge still qualifies. It could be it's us, or anyway, I'm not sure. Probably, it seems like it would be a problem. Mishur she mitzvah zo. From the reasoning for this mitzvah is as follows: she nizkor veneda she'ola mechudesh velo kadma. That's one of the principles of Shabbos. Last night we actually didn't have a minyan, so we walked over to Shari HaTikva, And the other rabbi Hoffman was discussing this. He says that he usually discusses the halachos of Shabbos on his shiur on Friday night, but he said this year he wants to focus on the hashkafos of Shabbos. He's talking about how Shabbos, of course, we have to make sure to focus on the fact that Shabbos reminds us that the world is created ex nihilo, and that God created the world. As it says in the Ten Commandments, when it discusses the mitzvah of Shabbos, as we'll get to soon in Parshas Yisro, which is, as far as we're concerned, the next parsha. We're in Parshas B'Shalach now. Kisheshes yomim asa Hashem es hashamayim ves haaretz. God worked on creating the world for 6 days. Es hayom ves kol asher bam. The sea and everything that's in it. Vayanach b'yam ha-shvi'i. And he rested on the seventh day. Al Kain, for that reason, lizkor hadavar roi lanu shenanuach b'makom echad. And not only should we refrain from performing labor, but we should make sure. Not only should we refrain from performing labor, but we should actually stay put on Shabbos. We shouldn't be walking all over the map. It's not considered restful. Kilomar shelo nelech v'derech rachok rak derech tiul v'oneg. We shouldn't travel large distances on Shabbos, but rather we should just walk in a manner of just strolling. Shouldn't walk to travel, we should walk to stroll. Uvalicha shnei masar mil ein bo torach rav. So a 7 mile walk is not so much. Okay. In fact, crazy. People sometimes walk 7 miles on Shabbos permissibly. But the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. Kigon shoves ba midbar oba mayra madino. Let's say you're not in a city on Shabbos, but let's say you're in the desert or in a. So if you're in the desert or in a cave, so you will have this measurement, but not from the end of the city because you're not in a city. But let's say you're a cave, which would all be considered Rishus Hayachid. It would have sort of has walls, be considered a private domain. Then you have 2,000 amos, or midaraisa, you have 24,000 amos. Outside the cave, or if you're just on your own in the desert, then you have 24,000 amos from where you are, where you're dwelling. Of course, also, if you're in a city, say, there are certain. For example, on the lines of being in a cave on Shabbos. So, too, there's certain times, if you're in Rishus Hayachid on Shabbos, no matter how big it is, even, let's say, if the Eruv goes outside the boundaries of the city, so then you have 2,000 amos from the end of the Eruv. In fact, there is a little bit of a shaila in Yerushalayim, because there are neighborhoods in Yerushalayim that are very far removed from each other. Originally, before there was construction in between, maybe some people are still machmir nowadays, there was a shaila about Harnof, but especially Ramot, which is completely disconnected from the rest of Yerushalayim. There's a highway in between. There are no houses in between whatsoever, and we'll get for a second what the exact definition is. So Rav Yoshe said, because that even if you're machmir not to carry in the Eruv, still you could use the Eruv as a way to be makel to walk from Yerushalayim to Ramot and vice versa on Shabbos, because it's all considered surrounded and it's considered one area. This is along the lines of the halacha of if you have spent Shabbos in a cave, that since it's all one Rishus Hayachid, or one demarcated area, then you measure the tchum starting only around that. V'chein mi sheyatza chutz latchum lirtzono o le'onso o birshus bezden. So let's say you went outside the tchum. So what happens? If you did it willingly, you said, ha ha, I want to go outside the tchum, so the chazal penalized you, and you are not allowed to come back. You have to stay outside the tchum, you have to stay within your arba amos, your four personal cubits, for the rest of Shabbos, so you're not allowed to come back, as a penalty for violating the rules of tchum. But if somebody took you out, let's say a mob carried you from your house in the city and took you outside the tchum, then you also have four amos only, but if they bring you back in, I'm sorry, so if you leave willingly, then even if you come back in, you still only have four amos. But let's say you leave unwillingly, then you have four amos while you're still outside, but let's say the mob comes and carries you back in the city, then you are free to move about within the city as much as you want. Right. B'shus Bezdin is the same, that let's say you left the Tchum to give Eidus HaChodesh, because we say you're not allowed to violate Shabbos, so it's the same thing. You're in Yerushalayim now, so once you're in Yerushalayim, you're free to move about as much as you want, but once you leave, if you left the Tchum in Yerushalayim, then you have problems. The im hukav b'mechitza b'Shabbos madino. Also, that's it's an issue if you go outside the tchum and then someone surrounds you with a partition on Shabbos, which connects you to the tchum or gives you a bigger area to move about in. That's also issues of whether it's whether they did it on purpose or not on purpose, or you just happen to have become surrounded. Different halachos that govern that. So the definition of the city. He's skipping the basic definition of the city here, but the basic definition of the city is simply a group of houses. So in order to be considered one group of houses, one city for the purposes of Tchum, the houses have to be within 70 and two-thirds amos of each other, 70 and two-thirds cubits. So this is usually not really an issue that most, again, like you said, in the five towns, it doesn't go according to the municipal boundaries of the city. It goes according to just the groupings of houses. That's why all the five towns are not a problem. You can walk freely within all the five towns on Shabbos, or you could walk, you know, all in Brooklyn and Queens and the Bronx, because not the Bronx. Bronx is not connected, but because they are all completely contiguous. The problem would only arise when you have something like from Manhattan to the Bronx or Manhattan to Queens or Manhattan, certainly to New Jersey, which is much farther away, and the houses are not within 70 and two-thirds amos of each other, then you have a problem that you could have issues of tchum. One of the characteristics that's required of houses for purposes of forming a city for tchum is that people actually have to live there. An office building does not count as a house. So Sefer Chinuch is going to discuss a little bit about the requirements for the houses that comprise the city for tchum purposes. Uvayis hayotze yoser mishar bate hayir shivim ama v'shirayim. Let's say a house juts out from the other houses of the city. Again, 70 and two-thirds amos. So it's halachically considered attached to the city, and you would measure the tchum, again, from the outermost point of that outermost house, even if it's not really grouped within the rest of the houses of the city. Uveis haknesa sheish bo dira lachazonim. Let's say there is an apartment in the shul for the servicemen of the shul to live there. Then that would be considered a house, that it extends the boundary of the city if it's farther away from the center of the city. But otherwise not. If it's just a shul where nobody lives there, like this one, then this would not be considered a house for the purposes of tchum. Uveisa vodazara, sheyesh badira lakomrim. They don't have to be Jewish. If there's a house of idol worship that the priests live in, or a monastery or something like that, that would also be considered a monastery, obviously. But even if it's like a church that has the priest's apartment in the basement, I don't know if such things exist, but if such a thing existed, then that would count for tchum purposes. The otzros, sheyesh bahandira, if it was like a storehouse, also somebody happens to live there, that also counts. V'shalosh mechitzo she'en alein tikro ma'aziva. Let's say there's not a roof over the dwelling, but it's just three partitions. V'ir aruka mirubas. Let's say there's a long city or a square city. Then you just basically, you don't follow the zigzag. Let's say this house is all over the place. You don't follow the zigzag boundary of the city. Rather, you draw a rectangle around, let's say this long city that has a zigzag boundary, you draw a rectangle over the outermost houses, and you have another rectangle that's 2,000 amos bigger than that square.
This actually has been...
Right, you would. You would make a rectangle out of Manhattan, but it still wouldn't cover, it wouldn't go farther north.
It would go further...
it goes further east. Right, you can walk to that.
Right.
Then you couldn't walk to Riverdale, that's still a problem. But I know Rabbi Willig walks from here to Riverdale. I think it's a machlok between Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Schechter. You can't.
No.
It's not that once you get into another tchum, your tchum starts the way it is. Even if your tchum cuts into another tchum, you can't, you don't get the entire tchum that your tchum cuts into. Okay, right. You only get to the borders of your tchum.
Even if there's an erev in between or something?
So there's, an erev tchumin? You can make an erev tchumin, right.
And you can go up to like 2,000 amos outside.
An erev tchumin is a different thing. An erev tchumin is you want your place of resting on Shabbos to be different. So if it's, in other words, if it's less than, but it still has to be within your tchum now. But otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Because, for example, let's say...
No, but can't he start his tchum like 2,000 amos outside and then go from there?
Right, I was going to say...
Yeah,
so he could do that.
Right, he could be has an erev tchum, but that's more than 2,000 amos away from the border of Manhattan.
So, in other words,
right, but I'm saying if you left an erev in the Bronx, and then, so then you would get... That might get you. If you left an erev...
It only took us an hour to walk. It's pretty close.
If you left an erev in the Bronx, then your tchum would be, if you round, and if you squared off the Bronx, could be you would get northern Manhattan.
Of course.
But it wouldn't work the opposite way. If you had an erev, if you just started in Manhattan, then you would still only be able to walk. So I don't know if Rabbi Willig makes an erev when he does that. I'm not sure.
Maybe he only goes from there to here, though.
No, he's definitely started in YU, like, giving a shiur Friday night on Shabbos, and he's back in his shul for Shacharis. So it could be he has an erev. That means he would have to make an erev. His erev would be in his house. Could be. Anyway, these are very, very complicated halachos with a lot of details. You have to, you have to figure it out. But erev tchumen only works, if it has to be. You have to be within the tchum on when Shabbos starts, as to where from where your erev is. Otherwise, it's ridiculous. It doesn't make sense.
Why when Shabbos starts? Why not a little bit before?
No, when Shabbos starts, it goes banish mashas. The erev in all erevin, the chalos, the starting of the erev is. Of the power of the Erev is Bein Hashmashas. So, for example, you make an Erev Chatzeros in your building, they only carry inside your building, so the Erev has to exist all of Bein Hashmashas, because that's when its power starts, and then once after Bein Hashmashas is over, and it's certainly nighttime, then you're allowed to eat the Erev, even if the Erev gets destroyed or is no longer there, the power already took hold. So the same thing, too, for an Erev Tchumen, which incidentally, of course, this Erev Tchumen only works for the Tchum Derabanan of 2,000 Amos. If you wanted to, the concept doesn't exist on a Derai, so it wouldn't work anywhere on a Derabanan level because it would be too far away. But let's say there was some sort of, you had to leave the Tchum for a Cholesh Ein Bo Sakona that you're allowed to violate Derabanans for, but not Deraisas for a sick person that's not Pikuach Nefesh, then there's no concept of tchum. I mean, of erev tchumen. In other words, let's say you needed to walk a little bit less than 24,000 amos, but you wouldn't be allowed to walk any more than the 24,000 amos because not pikuach nefesh. Okay. So agula, let's say the city's round, so then you circumscribe a square around the circle, and then you have another 2,000 amos square outside around that one. So in other words, you get more space in the corners than more extra space in the corners outside the actual boundaries of the city than you would if the city were square or rectangular.
You get 2,000 amos in each direction, or you get 2,000 amos squared?
You get 2,000 amos in each direction. 2,000, in other words, you have the circle, then you circumscribe a square around that circle.
So you can technically walk all the way around, and that's more than 2,000 amos, but you're still...
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you're allowed to walk as much as you want within the tchum. You can walk, you know, all day long back without stopping in the tchum, in theory. That's a Shabbos tech, but... Asuya kamin gam o kekeshes. Now, here is a problem that maybe applies to certain parts of New York City, that if the city is shaped like a gamma, which is like this, or it's shaped like some sort of bow, like this, and there is it's totally not shayach to a square or a rectangle at all. You don't just draw a gigantic square or rectangle around the whole thing, like if the city looks like this, so you don't get this entire space with no houses in it, so you just draw the tchum around the shape of the city because it's too far removed from a square or a rectangle. So mehichan modedin la, where you start measuring the tchum Shabbos. Uve eze chevel modedin, what kind of cord do you use to measure the Trum Shabbos, they used to use a flaxen or linen cord that apparently it didn't stretch during the process as much during the process of trying to measure the Trum. They were, each city used to be, it wasn't just houses as far as the eye could see, like in contemporary metropolitan areas, but it's they used to be that each city would know where its Trum ended. It would know when they would stroll outside the city on Shabbos. They would have boundary markings, or they would just have know based on growing up in that city where they could walk to and where they couldn't walk to. It's like the story with Reb Meir and Elisha ben Avuya Acher, who was riding a horse, who was his Rebbe and then went off the Derech. He was riding a horse on Shabbos, and Reb Meir was, and he was riding the horse outside the city, and Reb Meir was following him. So Acher said, you can't go any more than this. I see that this is the Trum Shabbos. So people used to know how far the Trum Shabbos was. But nowadays, it's hardly an issue, really. Because it's really all this, in metropolitan areas, everything is contiguous. Where it does come into play, actually, is in camps. I remember I went on a Shabbaton once in my senior year of high school, and they went to a camp. So one of the announcements they made before Shabbos is, if you're going on a walk, and in country roads with houses very far apart, that you have to remember you can't walk more than 2,000 amos outside the camp. Something people don't even think about nowadays. The chamash yiro shel chevel, the rope that they used to measure with, used to be 50 amos long. So one person would hold it, and there would be two people holding it, one on each end, and then they would sort of go like this. Like that, until they got to the 2,000 amos. The Igia lagai o lahar. What happens if while you're walking outside the city, you get to you can't go straight, but you get to a valley or a mountain. So you have funny situations where it talks about how they're going up and they're trying. One's holding it here and one's holding it by his feet, and then they're taking turns going, measuring going up a wall, or they get to a mountain. Or they get to a wall and they have to figure out if they're going to go over the wall or they're going to go pretend they're going straight through the wall. Very complicated halachos. Uvami somchin b'medida. You don't just rely on anyone. It has to be someone who's a surveyor, who really professionally knows how to measure land. Umi neman lahoid al hatchumin. Has to be, again, someone particularly mumcha. Has to be someone expert in these things. The eser prote and the rest of the details about tchum. It's mostly discussed in tractate Erevin and untractate Shabbos, because the laws of Shabbos are so complex, we need two masechtos to talk about them. So the laws of Trumen are really discussed because the Gemara is going to mention that there's such thing as an Erev Trumen. You could put some food in a place and then you get extra, you get your Trum starts there instead of where you actually are at the beginning of Shabbos. That's the laws of Trum are discussed in Maseches Erevin.
We can rely on survey maps or
things
like that now. We don't need people walking around with flaxen ropes.
And yes, absolutely. Yeah, but it doesn't come up nowadays. I mean, again, actually, in New York, it probably comes up more than in other cities because we have places, huge gaps without houses because of rivers. Central Park is, no, because it's completely surrounded by the city, so it shouldn't be a problem, Central Park. But you have, again, like northern New Jersey is in the New York metropolitan area, but there's the Hudson River separating New York City proper from there, so it is a problem. It could be. Obviously, it applies in all places, times in all places, just like all the rules of Shabbos, to both men and women equally. It's a negative commandment, first of all. But second of all, for Shabbos issues, even for the positive commandments, that men and women are equally commanded. Dover aleav v'holach afilu ama achas yoser mishalosh parasos loke. So if you violate this commandment, and you go even one more ama, even a tiny bit more than the three parasos that are biblically prohibited, that's the 24,000 amos, you receive the penalty of lashes. Even though for Shabbos, usually the punishment is skila or stoning. So this, since it has a separate commandment in the Torah associated with it, it's not under the general heading of those who do perform labor on Shabbos, which is a punishable by skila, but rather it receives lashes like a regular, quote-unquote, negative commandment. Lechein im holach afilo ama chutz l'apayim ama lo'ir, loke makas mardus derabanan. So if you violate, you go more than 2,000 amos, which is the rabbinical tchum, so you receive makas mardus, you receive the rabbinical lashes, which are less severe than the biblical lashes. The harambanzal, Nachmanides, again, our counting of the mitzvah and the safe, mitzvahs in the Sefer HaChinuch follows the Rambam, Maimonides. But he usually quotes the Ramban, which is more from his tradition, actually, because he's a student of the Rashba, who was a student of the Ramban. So he usually quotes when the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam. So the Ramban says, Kimash Omar HaRambam, that which the Rambam says, B'sefer HaMitzvah Shelo, De'isur Tchumin De'oraisa, that there is such a thing as a Tchum on a biblical level, Hu B'yoser Me'alpayim Ama. So it's from the what he says in the Sefer HaMitzvos. It sounds like even the 2,000 amos shear is a biblical shear. But in his work, the Mishnah Torah, he says v'chein ma she'amar b'chiburu hagadol. What he says in the work of the Mishnah Torah, she'chazer mizeh. He went back on it. The chasav shashir shel Torah who shalosh parsos, that the biblical shear is 24,000 amos, and the 2,000 amos is only rabbinically prohibited. And apparently there's a tshuva of the Rambam to Rav Shmuel Halevi, quoted here in the footnotes, where he says that no, he didn't go back, he didn't change his mind. He just, in the Sefer HaMitzvos, he wasn't as precise with laying out what the different halachos are, and he wasn't as precise in formulating the terminology, but really he always held that 24,000 amos was biblically prohibited, and 2,000 amos, of course, is only rabbinically prohibited. Because, I guess, in the Sefer HaMitzvos, he just wanted to say, he was just saying quickly that basic halacha, that it's only mutter to go less than 2,000 amos. It's not permitted to go more than 2,000 amos on Shabbos, even though biblically it may be permitted to go more. So the Ramban says ki akol tos, this is all a mistake. She'ein lanu iser tchum in derais aklal. There's no such thing as a tchum on a derais level. You can walk as far as you want on Shabbos, which is a big. This is a big nafgamina. There could be a big difference whether we're going like the Rambam or the Ramban. Let's say, according to the lines of what I was saying before, let's say you need to reach a chole she'en bo sakana, a very sick person but whose life is not in danger. So according to, and he or she is more than 24,000 amos away, so according to the Rambam, you're not allowed to do that because you're violating a biblical prohibition. But according to the Ramban, you are allowed to do that because you're allowed to walk on a biblical level. You're allowed to walk as far as you want on Shabbos. Of course, it's pikuach nefesh. Of course, you're allowed to walk as far as necessary. But also, if there's a doubt as to whether a certain area is included in the tchum or not, so according... or if it's very far away, so according to the Rambam, we have to be stringent because we're dealing with a biblical prohibition, but according to the Rambam, we could be lenient. V'chein misbar b'mekomos harbe min ha-gemara shelanu shi gemara as bavel. The Talmud Bavli, the Ramban claims, says, shanu somchin alea b'chol d'arenu, we rely on the Babylonian Talmud, as opposed to other sources which may indicate otherwise. But according the Ramban claims that according to the Babylonian Talmud, it's clear that there's no such thing as tchum on a deraisa level. The hirba harav rayosav al zeb b'mitzvah shin chaf aleph min alavin. So the Ramban brought a lot of proofs for his opinion in his critiques to the sefer the Rambam sefer mitzvos. B'uyefareish. So how does he explain the pasuk al yetzei ish mimkomo b'yom ha-shvi'i, that each man or each person shouldn't leave their place on Shabbos? So he says, he claims that it's al yetzei kamo al yotzi. You shouldn't remove objects from your place on Shabbos. So he considers this an allusion in the explicit text of the Torah to the prohibition of hotzah, the prohibition of carrying or transferring objects between the public domain and the private domain, or four amos within the public domain on Shabbos. Kimoshi yesh b'maseches erevin man demash melehachi. So in Maseches Erevin, one, there is some indications that they use this pasuk, this verse, to apply it to the Isser of Hotzah and not the prohibition of Tchumen.